I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all the things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That guy is Tom Merritt.
Hello, Scott Johnson. I feel like there is no better way to kick off a weekend.
Yeah, you know, it's 5 o'clock. You got nothing better to do.
Yeah. Just
get together and talk a little bit.
Bang on the drum all day.
Sure.
Work the weekend.
It's what we do.
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Oh, man, you're starting to rhyme and make sense. I don't get it.
What's going on here? Rock and roll weekend with your Sammy Hagar. It's,
well,
it's drive time in the 80s, folks.
He can't drive 85 if you're in the parts of the West. Hey, look at us doing a show with guests, and I'd like to introduce them. Let's do the returner first, coming back to the show. I want to say it's his second, maybe third time.
Oh, no, it's fourth time.
Fourth time?
Yeah, something like that.
Holy shite.
Yeah.
Well, you're like so regular, I couldn't even tell. Ladies and gentlemen, Steven Schleicher, purveyor of majorspoilers.com and a co-host on Comic Dorks. Hello,
on
welcome
back. S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y. Nice. Can I get in on this?
Absolutely.
Of course you can, because you're wearing a fez, dude.
There you go.
It's great to have you back. Thank you for joining us. Also joining us for the first time for reasons I can't explain. This should have happened before now. The one, the only, the creator of PvP Online, one of the greatest and oldest webcomics thriving on the internet. It's Scott Kurtz, everyone.
Radio voice.
Yeah, kick it in, dude.
Put it. I don't have one, but all you guys do.
Good. Yeah, it's good to have you, man.
It's 4 minutes after the hour at 4 o'clock on Rock 107 WPGU.
Yeah, I can do the Tom Lykos voice. 50 minutes past the hour.
Yeah.
Hey, you just Tom Lykos, blow me up, Tom.
You got to do it like your throat's busted up a little bit. Sure. Just let it hang out, man. It's fine. Scott Kurtz is obviously a good friend of the network, but also a co-host on Comic Dorks as well. And you might think it's an accident that they're both here tonight. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. Maybe it's just happy happenstance that on the 12th, that show is back to a regular schedule, and I know Woo-hoo. People are excited about it. So watch for that. But Tom, we may as well just dive right in, man. Let's get to this.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
What's going on?
Disney's chairman, CEO Bob Iger's going on. Mm. He told investors that Disney is developing ideas. Because that's what they do. But in particular, designs are part of the ideas for a far greater Star Wars presence in their parks. He said, quote, "We expect to provide details about this sometime next year," and implied that somebody asked him, is this going to be like Universal's Potter franchise, the Harry Potter experience? And he's like, yep. That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
That's entirely what it should be. They own it now. Why wouldn't it be? This doesn't come as a shock to me, but what do we have now? We have Star Tours and the revamped Star Tours, and that's it?
Yeah, they just have the revamped Star Tours over at Disney World. They don't have it at Disneyland in California.
Yeah.
I was talking with somebody who actually lives in Florida earlier today, and he said originally they were going to have an attraction next to Star Tours that was like the American Idol experience. Mm. They have since scrapped that, and apparently there's enough land where that place was going to be to put Star Tours in.
Hold on a second.
Or the Star Wars theme park.
There was a American Idol experience planned?
Planned, yeah.
They decided the part where your record fails and the management company rips off all your money was just too depressing.
I'm sure it was some
ride,
kind of weird live show kind of thing.
Jeez. What do you think, Kurt? Are you excited about more Star Wars all up in your Disney experience?
You know, a friend of mine is currently there with his kids, and he was texting me a lot from there. I've known him since the fifth grade. So, you know, we always spend a lot of time waxing nostalgically about how great his kids have it now.
Yeah.
But he kept saying to me, there's no Star Wars presence here. Star Wars is nowhere here.
Yeah.
And they own it. And I said, just wait. So,
yeah,
I've seen someone's posted. I don't know if that was a fan pick or not, but someone posted like a proposed whole Star Wars world, you know, like Tomorrowland and Dixieland and all the lands they have, and then one would just be Star Wars.
Yeah, why wouldn't they just do a straight up, you know, something that transitions between like the major environments of Star Wars, like desert planet, Tatooine looking deal and a Hoth looking deal.
Well, you know, my question now is how long before they do the same thing for Marvel? I mean, you could have New York City, you could have Asgard, you could have The Nowhere space station from Guardians. Mm-hmm.
There's only one thing that's a problem with that, and I'd have to go back and look it up. But at one point, because Universal had those Marvel characters at one of their theme parks, there was something in the negotiations where Disney can do everything west of the Mississippi, but Universal has it east of the Mississippi, something like that.
Oh, weird.
So that they could keep doing their Universal park down in
Florida. Mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I have an idea that would solve all of this, because they've got so much they could do with Marvel now, and they have so much they could do with Star Wars and other properties that they own. And certainly they'll be scooping up more things that we all love. Maybe it's time to start. I know there's some nostalgia there, but there's time to start scrapping some of the things that maybe don't perform as well at the parks. There's probably rides where you're like, that's been here for 50 years. We could probably pull that out and, you know, do the Battle of Hoth ride or something.
That's really hard because of that nostalgia factor. I mean, they just a few years ago, they had the Matterhorn that they completely redone. And though it's an exciting ride, you know, it's one that, you know, is a kind of a lame roller coaster.
Does it still have
but they're
going to
keep that around. They also have the giant carousel that they keep running, and Snow White and Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, all that stuff.
Some of that stuff you got to keep, and there's kids involved, and I totally get it. But like, there's a huge chunk, in my opinion, of say California, what's it called?
Oh, California Adventure.
That whole thing, which is owned by them, just hack some of that apart and make that Star Wars Adventure. I guarantee you this: they make an announcement where they come out and go, "Hey, we're turning California Adventure into Star Wars land." Nobody would care. It would just go overnight. Fine, keep the Tower of Terror in there and change it to Jabba's, this is where he pushes you off a cliff if you don't pay
Sarlacc
up or something.
Pit.
Yeah, the Sarlacc pit.
Sarlacc drop.
Why not?
Sarlacc jump.
That's what I'm saying. Anyway.
It'd be very interesting to see where they place it. My guess is they would place it in Florida before they placed it in California, only because they have so much space in the Orlando Kissimmee area that they could probably do, you know, 10 different theme parks right next to each other and still have room for more.
Yeah. Well, I have
a feeling that Disney is not thinking about these things. Like, they're pretty good at making money, it seems.
Yeah.
So my guess, if I totally had to guess, is the reason we haven't seen more Star Wars from them yet is they're waiting for that big buildup that happens when the first movie comes out. And they want to time it so that they can open like a really cool thing that is available right then. If they opened it up early, if they did something now, then first of all, they might not. I mean, these things take a lot more time than we probably guess, so they might not be able to do it as well. And they just want to take advantage of all that hype.
They have top men on this, is what you're saying.
They also have to wait to make sure the new movie is not a flop.
Yeah,
because there's a boardroom somewhere where they're like, well, let's do it now. Like, wait, what are the movies a flop? What are the odds of a Star Wars movie flopping? And then the whole room just stares at them.
Dude,
because it's possible,
sure,
right?
Sure.
It
could suck. It seems really unlikely at this point, but absolutely it could suck. It could be a problem. Suddenly people don't go. I just can't see it happening. I think it's as sure a bet they'll ever have. Unlike these, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy risks that totally paid off, but are risks nonetheless.
5 years from now, we're all going to be like, oh, that Star Wars land is so overdone. Everything's, you have to eat at the cantina and listen to the band.
Yeah.
I don't want to ride the pod race ride again.
Again.
That thing made me puke last time. All right. Well, if Disney is Obi-Wan Kenobi, then Warner Brothers is Darth Vader, and they've got stuff to talk about too, Tom.
Yeah, DC. We didn't bring up DC in any of this conversation. Mike P. Kennedy on our subreddit. Thanks to everybody who's been in the subreddit. If you haven't been in the subreddit, go get in the subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. Mike P. Kennedy let us know Warner Brothers has more comic book movies on their roadmap than Marvel. In addition to slating Batman versus Superman for March 2016, they put dates against 9 more untitled DC films, taking us through June 19th, 2020. Marvel has only planned out till May 3rd, 2019, the slackers.
Steven, do we have names for these?
We don't. Okay. Actually, it's all part of this big thing called Untitled DC Film. And so
I love that film.
There's 9 of them planned, and so you're going to be able to, they'll probably roll out like chapters is what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Of course they haven't. Of course they haven't announced.
You remember the amazing Untitled? He was amazing back in the day.
Tell you what.
Scott Kurtz, I know we're still licking our collective wounds over Man of Steel a little bit. Can DC do what they need to do to catch up and be the threat they were always meant to be?
Possibly. Certainly. Just because Man of Steel wasn't my cup of tea doesn't mean that it didn't do well for Warner Brothers. And certainly with Batman v Superman, this court case, that's going to be on the big screen soon. you know, there's a potential this could be a huge movie. I mean, whether or not we like it, you know, I wasn't a big fan of the Nolan Batman movies, and not because they weren't good, but just because I'm kind of bored of the Batman mythos now, especially just kind of redoing it. I mean, there are Marvel properties I feel this way about too. I really don't care for any of the non-Marvel stuff. I don't care for Spider-Man or the Fantastic Four. I'm kind of bored with the X-Men now. I think it's getting really convoluted. And the new Marvel films, which where they're kind of positioning themselves as a Pixar and saying, well, what about Guardians of the Galaxy? And you're like, who's that? And then they make a great movie. What about Ant-Man? Not Ant-Man. And then they make a great movie.
Yeah.
I'm more interested in that. So, but that doesn't mean that DC doesn't have a chance to, you know, also just dominate in the box office with their superhero movies. I think it's absolutely possible.
Yeah. I'm curious because originally Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice was supposed to come out May 6th of 2016. Then Marvel announced, hey, we already had an open slot on that same date. Guess what? It's going to be Captain America 3 is coming out on that date. And for months now, the two have just been kind of looking at each other going, who's going to back down first? And Warner Brothers has blinked and said, okay, well, we'll move this movie, but we're going to move it to March of 2016.
Yeah, dude.
Does that bother anybody? I mean, typically January, February are the worst times to release movies, and March kind of turns to be that turnaround time. So they either A, don't have a lot of faith in the movie, or B, they're looking at from March 23rd or whatever it is, all the way to Memorial Day as a big runway to make a lot of money.
Well, think about, so they were going head to head with Captain America 3, and that movie overperformed people's expectations this year. It did better than anyone thought. So I think they are just hedging their bets to say, well, look, can a movie that has Superman and Batman's name in it do really well in that part of the quarter, which typically doesn't perform very well? And the answer is probably yes. They probably will do just fine.
I'm going to bet it will.
Yeah. And this, and keep in mind, Winter Soldier was that time slot this year.
It was a week. It was like a week or 2 weeks later. It was April 6th or something. Yeah.
Sure. April 4th. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A weird part of the year, you know, traditionally anyway. So I don't know. I actually don't think there's that much going on with that move other than just trying to position themselves out of the way.
It's all studio stuff.
Yeah.
It's all studio decisions. Does anyone else just despise the fact that we live in an age where we're talking about movies that won't be out for 2 years?
Yeah.
Like who? I mean, it's not better. I hate to be one of the back in the good old days guys.
Yeah.
But it's just, it just feels to me like I've fallen into some kind of trap where we're talking about movies that are 2 years away. Like somewhere in a room, a group of executives are like, oh, that Psychology Report that we paid for is returning dividends. They'll talk about our movies for 2 years. They'll do our marketing for us.
Yeah, and they've
it just drives me crazy.
They've built a treadmill that supports that. So Comic-Con in San Diego and all these other events throughout the year, they tend to feed that machine of, we're going to have Batman, Superman come out, wave at you, not say anything and leave, and give you a little video teaser, which, you know, I saw the leaked footage and it kind of got me excited.
I felt like I was compelled to do it, or, you know, it was some slog to do it, I'd be worried about it. But we are excited about these movies, so we talk about them. I think the bigger problem that I foresee is these guys are being very optimistic that the world is going to continue to spend millions of dollars on comic book movies through 2019 and 2020.
That's what's crazy.
Well,
yeah.
How many people still spend millions of dollars on James Bond? And that guy's been around forever. Who would have figured he would have lasted this long?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And the fact is that they're diversifying.
Genre.
No, I know, but they're
And you don't see them say, we've got James Bond movies planned, and they keep changing James Bond around. I don't know. I feel like
I don't think it's the same. Because, you know, the Broccoli's have had ownership of that forever, and they don't make those movies don't keep getting made because they're just box office bonanzas. It's because of the passion of the Broccoli family, but.
Well, the name like Broccoli. Yeah,
I know.
With
I
the name like Broccoli.
You shouldn't laugh.
Well, but no, but with the superhero, with the superhero stuff, I think what Marvel has done is with their movies is they're basically saying they basically position themselves as a Pixar. So no one really cares if it's a superhero movie, it's right. just that it's a Marvel movie.
Right.
Right? Like, and, well what's the next Pixar film going to be? Dinosaurs. Dinosaurs? Great. What's the next one? Ideas in people's head, but the ideas are little characters. Sign me up.
Yeah.
So what's the next Marvel movie? It's about these guys in space. One's a raccoon. One's a tree. There. I pre-buy the ticket. Two tickets, please. You know.
Well, look, I will now.
Yeah. Six. Big Hero 6 is a Marvel animated movie adaptation. And mm-hmm. granted, it's not going to be exactly like the comic books, but people are already talking about it, and they don't – I bet you 90% of the people won't even realize that it's based on a Marvel property.
Is that thing a manga, by the way? It's a
No, is a U.S.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Title. It was a short-lived series, but it's like super short-lived. Mm. But that's the reason why Disney bought Marvel to begin with. They said, we don't want them for the big name. We don't want it for the Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four. They bought it for the entire library of characters that they have, including ones you've never heard of, like a talking raccoon in a tree that moves around.
It's brilliant. You establish the strength of, you know, the easy ones. You pull out your Iron Man, your Captain America, and not necessarily easy. They're kind of B-tier in the old days, but you've made them such an important thing that now you can make Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man, and 20 other weird-ass movies. If MODOK doesn't make an appearance in something soon, I'll eat my freaking hat.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. It's amazing what they're pulling off. It's just incredible to me.
Hey, you know when that people are saying when's a Justice League movie going to be announced?
Yeah.
There's an untitled DC film coming out on August 5th of 2016. And I hear someone at Warner Brothers making talk that that Justice League movie may come sooner than later.
Ooh, look at you with the scoop.
I don't know. Just what I hear.
Activate.
Steven the Scooper or something is your name.
Form of ice guy thing.
Well, speaking of Steven, he gave us a little news here, Tom. What's this?
Yeah. Steven pointed out the book 3 of Legend of Korra TV series has been pulled from Nickelodeon's cable channel. We'll show online instead. What? But you still have to pay for cable that gets Nickelodeon in order to watch it online.
Right.
So you could either say this is some kind of forward thinking into the digital future where our cable bill is really just a pass to watch digital TV, or it's damage control for canceling a cult hit, which they didn't feel was getting enough.
Well, I don't know if you guys have followed this story, but it was a mess to begin with. I think it's because some of the episodes leaked early, but literally a week before the season premiere, that's when they announced that the new season is starting. And they sent out like one promo piece that went around to some of the online places and the TV channels. But literally no one had any idea when the new season was going to start. It dropped on people. And then Nickelodeon was surprised that it didn't have the viewership that they thought. And so it went for like four or five episodes. And then right before San Diego Comic-Con, literally the day before, Nickelodeon said, well, we're yanking it off broadcast and we're just going to put it online. Now, to make things even worse, they never released season 3 on iTunes like they did in the previous seasons, where every week you could be an iTunes subscriber to the series and get the new episodes when they come out. Mm-hmm. It's not on Hulu. It's not on Amazon Prime or any of those other Netflix. The only place you can watch this now is on the Nickelodeon website. And you don't have to pay. It's not like HBO to go, but you do have to go to their website and still sit through some embedded ads like Ninja Turtles, which is running right now, in order to see the episode. I think it's crazy. I think Nickelodeon didn't know what they're doing, and this isn't the first time that they've pulled some crazy stunt like this.
It's very odd. And that show's got a big following, and
yes, it does.
It's going to have a big freak out as a result, but I don't understand the logic of yanking it from every other possible way of seeing it that everyone is already invested in, paying for, or willing to do, and putting it in the basement, basically, and saying you can only get in there with some kind of weird access. That's very odd, very weird.
I don't know who owns Legend of Korra or the Avatar series. I don't know if it's the two creators or if it's Nickelodeon has a share in this, but it almost seems like, hey, this is something that has some popularity. Now, granted, the first week's numbers of the show that they poorly advertised only brought in a million and some people, but people were expecting this to be online. They weren't expecting to go to the cable channel. And I think Nickelodeon was feeling the pressure of, we've got to make advertising dollars. We've got to make our cable channel relevant. And I think that we've seen with Netflix and others that you don't have to have a cable channel to be relevant anymore.
Yeah.
And I wish more cable channels would realize this, that they don't have to bend down to the cable providers to get their revenue.
I predict Netflix will announce sometime in the future. This is not forecast yet, but I would say that they, at some point, the creators of this thing, whatever they do next, assuming this third season is the end for them, it's like a three-part, you know, the way they do things.
Yeah.
That their next thing is a direct to Netflix style product.
That's why I said I don't know who has the ownership in that.
Whoever the creators, whoever create this stuff. Yeah.
Well, you can't blame the network for demanding that you have a cable subscription to see this thing. They paid for it.
Sure.
But they're not. That's what Steven just mentioned, which I didn't realize.
You can go to the website right now and watch the latest episode.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, great.
It's odd. It's freaking weird.
It makes no sense because they could be making revenue
sense
from
to me now. The fact that you don't need to log in with a cable subscription totally turns it for me.
Mm-hmm. And what does it mean?
Because
to you?
Because all of the data out there say, you know who doesn't pay for cable? Younger viewers. And my guess is they're looking at this thing saying, look, we've got a cult hit. People love this. They're not loving it in large enough numbers to take a slot that we could put this other thing in and get advertising numbers. And if we go online,
it could be a hit online, though.
We will be able to capture people. But, and we have friends that work at Nickelodeon, they have mastered the art of selling their own content. They have an in-house ad agency. So if they're like, hey, don't put it on Hulu, don't sell it on iTunes, this cult audience will find it. They will come to nick.com and we can sell advertising through there because we have an in-house ad agency and make all the money ourselves. And this is the beginning of a new digital play that Nickelodeon could be breaking new ground of being able to launch an advertising supported channel that's not involved with Hulu, Netflix, et cetera.
Yeah.
It'd be great if it happens, but I just think that a very popular series like Korra, they mishandled the launch, and I think that this is just them trying to scramble to recover.
I think both are true. Yeah. I actually do. I think you're right about the mishandling the launch and scrambling, and then probably some executive who's been like, guys, I've been telling you, we can make this work. This is our opportunity to take lemons and make lemonade.
Yeah, it was someone somewhere that went, hey, I can take advantage of this situation. Yeah. Which didn't happen for a show like Beware the Batman, right?
Right, right.
Which I saw on Netflix the other day. I'm like, what? When did this happen? Was there a Batman with Alfred?
Ran for like 3 months.
He was like, it's like this really slick. The animation is really weird. It looks like someone's playing with dolls, but they erase the hands. The animation is terrible. Mm. But the premise of it was you have a young Batman. Alfred's a young cockney like bruiser, you pugilist. And then instead of Robin, the sidekick was Katana.
What?
Super interesting. Yeah. And I'm like, when did this show come and go? And it's like, well, they aired like 3 episodes of it and then put it on at 3 a.m. And then it died.
It looks like, and I still can't find anything definitive, but it looks like because it comes out of Nickelodeon Animation Studios in Burbank, like this is an in-house Nickelodeon production.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Not that they couldn't release DiMartino and Konietzko to allow them to take it to Netflix if they didn't want it, but it sounds like Nickelodeon is in control of it as long as they want to be.
Do you think that they might do something like what Disney has done where they launch their own premium app that features their programming on there?
Yeah, I think they could.
They could be doing that.
And this is just a convenient way to do a little test.
I hope people flood the website to watch the show and show that that television is outdated.
Nickelodeon has an app, but it's for the channel. It's not what I think what Steven's talking about is an app that's like got its own program.
That its own Netflix the Nickelodeon Netflix channel or whatever, but it's just Nickelodeon.
Well, and they have Disney's got so many deals going with Netflix anyway that they kind of have that sewn up. But yeah, either way, I just, whatever it takes to get good quality animation on television on a consistent basis is great in my book, and that show is awesome. And so is Avatar before that, or Airbender before that. I guess it was Avatar. Last Avatar.
Yep, Last Avatar.
Not the Last Airbender. No, he was the Last Airbender. I knew it was a hell of a good thing, and they should keep making more of that stuff.
And it did not involve the Na'vi.
No. Tom, I'd like to perform in the Super Bowl. What are my chances?
You're no Weird Al. I just.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
I don't mean to be too harsh, but I don't want to beat around the bush. Rob Stack alerted us to a change.org petition to pressure the NFL into hiring Weird Al Yankovic to play next year's Super Bowl halftime show in Glendale, Arizona on February 1st. More than 100,000 people have signed. I don't think the NFL will do this.
I don't think they're going to either, but I think that it is no worse. It's better than most of who they have perform anyway. I'm never really into whoever they get up there, so it's fine. I'm also kind of in a weird place right now. I'm a little bit tired of Weird Al. That 8 videos in 8 days thing kind of wore on me a little bit. I'm like, I think I like my Weird Al in smaller fits and starts and less constant all the time, the way that felt. But even so, I'd take this over Gaga or Cyrus or 100 other people that you know are getting lined up for that thing.
But don't you think there's a chance that they might add him to it just for fun, for just a little part of it? Like you still have Madonna up there or McCartney.
Right.
But then Weird Al comes out for a little cameo.
He pops out of a cake and dances and does his accordion.
What
and
would the damage be? What would the damage be?
Nothing. Well, I think the big damage is people know Weird Al as somebody who makes fun of stuff, who makes a parody of stuff. So for Weird Al to show up in a halftime show at the Super Bowl is essentially saying, hey, Weird Al is going to make fun of the Super Bowl and the halftime show, something that the Super Bowl people, NFL, does not want to happen.
If that's what they think of themselves, then F those guys.
The NFL takes itself very seriously.
They do. They've got the of people that have sticks shoved up their butt so far, NFL is one of them.
And they don't pay taxes. And they're like fighting. There's a fight going on to make the NFL pay taxes, and it's controversial. That's the kind of organization that you're dealing with. And it's a little bit nerds versus jocks here. I think I think people are getting behind this petition, partly because they're excited about Weird Al. They didn't get the burnout that you did, Scott. Mm. But partly because they're like, yeah, let's have some geek culture show up in this sporting event that we're all forced to watch every year.
Yeah. I like the Lord parody. The rest of it was okay. I'm just saying. I don't want to get in trouble here, but I like Foil.
Yeah.
That was all right.
I like Foil.
That was about it.
Yeah. It wasn't that
great. Well, on the plus side, if Weird Al did do it, and considering the number of celebrities that he got to be in his videos, there would be a good chance that he could get a number of celebrities to show up and help perform at the halftime
show. Good point.
Yeah.
Why not?
Ralph just solved it.
What?
Get Weird Al for the Puppy Bowl.
Oh, my God.
Ralph, you bastard. He's right again. Once again, Ralph is right. Finally, we got what's going on with this old man? I'm just finishing Old Man's War, so I'm super stoked about what you're going to tell me next.
Hobbit from PA submitted this one on the subreddit. Sci-fi and director Wolfgang Peterson will be taking on the television adaptation of John Scalzi's Old Man War series.
What?
They are going to call it Ghost Brigades, but it will not be limited to the novel Ghost Brigades. That's just what they're going to call the TV series, and it will start from the beginning. He said they will cover events from Old Man's War.
Okay. That's all. Okay. The name.
Johnson, are you reading it?
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's one of my favorite things ever.
It's so good.
It's really good. This seems like a long time coming, and I was slow to get to the book. I'm just finishing it, and I'm stoked to get through the rest of the series, but. The naming convention is a smart one. You don't want to, you know, it's like Game of Thrones. You don't want to change your title every year to match the book. You just need to give it the best one, and the best one's probably Ghost Brigades. All of that stuff is good. How do we feel about sci-fi and their treat? I'm not trying to make this sci-fi, you make too much Mansquito and not enough good science fiction, but they kind of make a lot of Mansquito and not a lot of good science fiction. So are we okay with them, or would we prefer somebody else do this?
Wasn't Galactica on sci-fi?
Yeah, but that ended in 2009. And it was
what?
It was a rough ending there, and
well,
I mean, you know,
Stargate SG-1,
sure, but that started on
start there.
Yeah, it was syndicated for a while and all that, and it finished there. You're right. And I loved Atlantis, and I really liked. I thought SGU was actually pretty good. Universe was all right.
I liked you.
I mean, they've had their moments. Clearly, they've had their moments, but they cancel a lot of stuff. It also feels like you said this the other day on DTNS. It feels like they're. How do you put this? I think it was you, but they're a little Disney-ified in terms of content. I kind of wish a more,
they aren't as dark.
They won't go as dark as FX or AMC or somebody else is all I'm getting.
Yeah. I think I was on Sword and Laser when we were,
that's what it was. You and Veronica were talking. That was it. I don't know how that makes me feel other than, you know, this makes a difference. If Marvel, like we were talking about Marvel earlier, if they just blew it with all these hero movies, we wouldn't care about Guardians, or the news about such things would just make us roll our eyes. But because they nailed it, it's great. I feel like sci-fi has ground to make up. They have a lot to prove.
Oh yeah, after Sharknado.
Yeah, and this is a really cool property, and you really want to see it do well, and whatever. And they have made other announcements lately that are interesting. Their 12 Monkeys thing, as much as it may seem derivative of the film, is really interesting looking.
Yeah.
So maybe, I don't know, Steven, where are you at?
You know, to be honest, I've never read this series. Sorry. I'm sure I lose some geek cred
it's
there.
Really good.
I think Tom knows that I'm more Sword than Laser. Shannara, the Shannara series is going over to MTV, being turned into a series over there.
I think it's
more people that get on board with this stuff, and hopefully the more people that recognize that, hey, these are based on books, We've seen what happens with the sale of the Game of Thrones books have increased since that series has been on. Yeah. So I don't see why this could be a bad thing for people who need to go out and read some more.
That'd be fun.
And it's the director of The Neverending Story.
Oh.
As well as Air Force One.
Atreyu. Oh, wait a minute. Wolfgang
Peterson.
Now, in the Line of Fire, I know that one.
Get off my plane.
Also, Das Boot.
Yeah.
My family. That's a good movie.
He's got a range of movies that he's quite interesting as a director in. But
And to me, that's the reason. That's why you can say, like, didn't sci-fi do Battlestar Galactica? Because, they had Ronald D. Moore do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
think
so
about it. Think about it not like they're making it. Think about it like they purchased it.
Hmm.
They're running it.
They're allowing a showrunner and producers. They commissioned it.
Do I wish HBO got it instead of sci-fi? Sure. But also part of me is glad HBO didn't get it. What I'm saying is I think right now it's a mad scramble. I think everyone is realizing that it's a new golden age of TV, and if you can get a good series on there, you can get it. The only reason AMC is AMC now is because they got The Walking Dead and Mad Men, but before it was American Movie Classics.
Yeah.
Yeah, they showed old movies. That white-haired guy came on and went, Cary Grant, suave son of a bitch. Is that TMC?
That's TMC.
Right.
But classic. Same thing. AMC was were running old crappy movies and nobody cared about anything. And then Mad Men hit, and then pretty quickly after that you had Breaking Bad. Yeah. And Breaking Bad was like, oh, here's all the proof you need. So I'm with you there. You know?
It feels like a land rush. If you go to Amazon Instant Video, you'll see at the top that there's just tons and tons of pilots where they just made a ton of pilots and they're just throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these networks are just one good show away from changing everything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think it's always the race to be first, to be second. So
we're seeing the death of the stranglehold of broadcast networks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why there's this land rush is that, I mean, HBO really proved it because they were able to take the risk of putting things on without having to have them get ratings. But they proved, hey, you can have great television on cable and people will watch it. And then USA started to do some. And then all of a sudden, AMC has a hit with Mad Men. And then the gates are open, right? Now everybody's trying to be that. And the broadcast networks don't have the stranglehold on everything. And then now you add on top of that, like you're saying, Scott, you have Amazon and Netflix and you know, all of, and now there's like the world is your oyster. If you have a television idea, there's plenty of people to pitch.
Sure.
I mean, go back 5 years to when Netflix was the company that sent you CDs and say one day that will be online only and it will have a hit television show that you watch. And you went, go F yourself.
That'll get like, you know, awards and Golden Globes.
Call the police, honey.
Yeah.
Now we have House of Cards and Orange is the New Black, and people talk about that like it was on network TV.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, what's on network TV that anyone gives a crap about
Hannibal? Hannibal's it. Everything else is, And for the life of me, I can't figure out how NBC is running that show. It's amazing. It's a really good show.
I don't know.
I really like that CSI 500. Phoenix.
What's the new series? CSI Cyber?
Yeah.
I will watch NCIS with Bakula just because of Bakula.
Yeah, you got to watch Bakula say, oh boy, every time he looks in a mirror. But here's the thing. My wife is really into Bones right now. She's binging it. And
the television show.
The Bones television show. Thank you for the clarification. And she loves it because it's just kind of throwaway dumb TV. And man, it is dumb. And I don't like it. But I like who's in it, and there's some good chemistry, and all this stuff's fine. But it just reminds me when I watch it, I'm like, man, this is not the TV I am into now. The TV I'm into now is gritty, interesting, real, daring, imaginative. And why sci-fi is so at the tail end of this boggles my mind. They should have been at the forefront years ago. They should have been the guys that said, all right, we're going to do something, you know, weird and crazy here. Now, just because science fiction or fantasy-based stuff ideas are coming into vogue in television again, now they're Johnny Come Latelys. They should have been leading the pack.
No, of course not. That actually would have been a stupid move for them to lead the pack, because there was a time when people were not watching sci-fi and fantasy, even though we were.
Yeah.
And they would have killed the network. It's a sad but true. We all complain like MTV doesn't do videos anymore. But that's because people stop watching that stuff. And it's the reason AMC started doing television shows, is because the novelty of, oh, watching these classic old movies wore off.
Yeah.
And the ratings start to decline, and you have to change the network. What sci-fi's flaws, in my opinion, are is that they didn't navigate forward into an interesting new area. They threw wrestling and reality shows up.
Yeah, wrestling.
And they just didn't do very well with those.
Wrestling and ghost hunters and stuff.
And Ghost Hunters actually was one of their more successful ones.
You're totally right, though. It's a business thing. I get it. I just,
also, don't forget that sci-fi is owned by NBC Universal, right?
Yeah, Comcast, all that stuff's all wound together. But so are a lot of channels that are, you know, that are doing okay. I guess USA Networks, I think, is also a NBC Universal thing. I mean, there it seems like only like three companies own everything now. So who knows who's pulling what strings. But regardless, we will look forward to Old Man's War with rapt attention and hope they get it right.
Oh, right. Yes, we were talking about Old Man's
Yes,
War.
Yes, we were indeed. Hey, before we move
Yay,
on.
Yay, John Scalzi. Congratulations.
Yeah, good job, man. Did you like Guardians of the Galaxy? Well, you want to get a cool print featuring a certain dancing tree in a flower pot? Well, head on over to frogpants.com/store today, and you can grab one for your very own self. That's all I'll say about it, because I don't want to spoil anything more. Just go check it out. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. That's at frogpants.com/store.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Twitch has gone all twitchy. What the hell's going on over at Twitch?
Poor M.
Uh-oh. I just started streaming. I'm streaming tonight. What happened?
Well, so, okay.
Do you have any music?
I don't.
Do you have any video that you're going to run?
I have a bunch of music.
By video, we're playing WildStar, and you'll be able to watch us play WildStar. It has music in it.
I would turn the music off. Yeah. Turn the music off.
Yeah, because this is the problem, Kurtz. Literally, this is the truth. If you were, let's say you were a musical artist, and you licensed your music to, let's say, the WildStar team. Let's say they're the ones that commissioned you to make music. You own the rights to the music, but you have licensed it for them to use in their game.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, since it's a licensed property, when people see you streaming on Twitch, at least this is how the news worked out. If you're on Twitch and you're streaming gameplay and you're the guy who wrote the music and own the rights to it, yet you're still streaming a game that has your music in it, they will detect that. And in the VOD or the video on demand form of your video you just made, they will strip that out or mute it.
They'll mute a 30-minute block.
30-minute block.
Which that music occurred.
When that music happened. Even though you own the music, it doesn't care. It's like YouTube with, like, we have the rights on the morning show to play these covers that Brian Ibbett plays. And he plays them because he pays every year to do that, where it's all legal on the up and up. But when we put up our YouTube archive, they have no idea that he has the rights. So they just assume we don't. And then they block our video from countries or territories or altogether or from mobile or whatever, depending on the rights that they've worked out with these companies. So most people think that this deal with Twitch has more to do with this idea that Google's about to buy them for $1 billion, and they're scrambling to get into line with what their expectations are, what their standards are. But I read this thing by that Ars Technica writer, I can't remember his name, that I really like this theory, it resonated with me, that maybe things were going south or are going south or may have fallen out altogether on that deal. And now they're kind of ham-fistedly trying to get themselves in a position where they're much more attractive as something to purchase. I'm dying to get Tom's take on this thing, but players are up in arms. They're freaking out. But sadly, they don't really have a lot of great other places to go that cater to this sort of thing. But
why are they up in arms?
Because they want to play. Okay, so let's say you're an average Dota 2 megastar on the internet. You play Dota 2, you're a big shot. Maybe you're on one of the teams at the International, and you're playing all the time. And while you're playing, you've got your heavy metal mixed volume 20 playing, because that's what you do while you play Dota.
Don't play it then.
They're going to mute your whole stream, and that's what they're pissed about. They want to
play it. You don't own that music, you dumb shit.
But here's the thing. Even the official Dota tournament channels have been run into these mute issues because of the music in the game that's being played, and the auto detection system is just like yanking it off. Yeah. I mean, I've run into these issues on YouTube, but it's crazy and it's silly. I mean, not silly, but I mean, we've seen we had this problem with our YouTube channel when we were running Steam videos, and we had to contact the developers, and they were basically like, hey, we want you to show our game on your YouTube channel, but please turn off the music because it's going to continually to violate these copyright issues that we don't own those rights to.
Sure.
So it's a crazy messed up mess. And
so if I came to you, Scott Kurtz, and said, hey, come on over to the house. We're having a barbecue. There's about 30 of us. And while you guys are all here, I'm gonna have a boombox and I'm just going to play my favorite hits from the 80s. Nobody bats an eye. Nobody blinks. Nobody cares. Nobody's paying at the door to have the rights to hear your music, even though nobody at that party owns it. They're just here to be a social thing. What these players are claiming is that is how they're using the music. There's no, like,
except that
soundtrack.
If you're on Twitch, you can earn revenue from your streams.
Well, true, but the music is usually happening in the background. You're talking over it. And yes, there's a bunch of caveats, but it's not the same as this, that, hey, we're playing music.
There's two different things, and I want to make an important distinction here just as regarding the facts of the story. There's ambient music, which is I'm playing music in my room, and that comes across. And that's one thing that they're looking for and saying, you can't do that unless you have the rights to it. The other thing is in-game music. Now, Elizabeth Baker, who's the lawyer for Twitch, wrote on their post introducing this new copyright enforcement scheme that this includes in-game as well as ambient music. However, on the Reddit AMA, the CEO of Emmett Shear of Twitch said, we have absolutely no intention of flagging songs due to original in-game music. If that's happening, it's a problem. We'll investigate and try to fix it. So they seem to be saying, look, if it's in the game, if it's part of the game, we understand that that's just essential to the game, and we're not going to block you from that. But at the same time, they've contradicted themselves in another post, so people are confused. Because I think people are always going to get upset. People are more understanding of, like, yeah, I can't just stream a radio station on my Twitch channel and say, but I'm playing games. That's okay. But it is frustrating to people to say, look, I'm just playing the game and this music plays in the game. And so I can't have the full game experience when I'm doing the run through if I don't have that music there. And in some games, you can't even turn the music off. Yeah. And that becomes a problem.
Yeah.
Well, and that is more of a legitimate issue. And it's also a bit of the cart being put before the horse and there being an adjustment period, which, as you know, no one on the internet could ever handle. Right. But no change. Yeah. But look, Twitch obviously is a service created to help you stream video games. I know this because we do it. We're going to do it tonight. We're going to stream some WildStar. And when I set up my channel, it says, what game are you playing? And you can choose from all of these games.
Yeah, no, that's why they exist. That is the channel. That is who they are. Yeah.
I also know that, at least from Carbine's point of view, because we've been talking with them about WildStar, we play with one of the lead devs in our guild. They encourage streams. They work with streamers to promote the game. So, you know, what bothers me is when the system that's trying to stop, you know, all this music from being played that's copyrighted, which is going to cause headaches for the company, and something catches the WildStar theme and mutes that, everyone's up in arms about, well, now they're going to mute our thing, and now this thing that we're entitled to is going to be taken away from us. And that's silly to think that. It's a service for streaming video games, you know?
Well, and that's why people are upset about how they're handling it. So there's other peripheral stuff in this. So they shut down Justin TV, which really is the grandfather of Twitch anyway. That came first, and Twitch was this idea, and they branched out to that. They shut it down suddenly without any kind of warning and off, out. There was no, like, hey, a month from now, we're turning the service off. It was very unceremoniously dropped. All archives destroyed. That's maybe the hyperbolous word, but...
Yeah, it is, because they gave you a couple months notes that the archives are going
to. It was real quiet, but yeah, they didn't might say much. But if you did hear about it, they did tell you, like, in June, I think, that they were going to get rid of archives. We did not know, however, the service is going away, and they're doing the same thing with existing Stay Forever video on demand recordings of your streams on Twitch. Those are going away. So now you have these things that have, like, a timed existence, and they can, you know, things can be pushed up to YouTube for permanence and all that sort of thing.
Right.
But they removed all of that. So it's like a lot of this, like, remove, like somebody's just pounding a keyboard with a big fist, just not willing to have any nuance about it. And that's the part that I think people are having trouble with. It's very abrupt. It's very non-transparent, and nobody really knows what's going on. Most think it has to do with the Google acquisition. Some think it's because Google may have backed out and now they're scrambling to be a thing that someone else is willing to pay $1 billion for, and this is a way to do it. So regardless of like, because I agree with you, there are places where people jump to conclusions. Oh, they're shut. Twitch is doing this and we're all screwed. It's the government behind, you know, we can go as far with the conspiracies as we want to go or not. I think what's really got people worked up is before this service supported a certain way of being, and now it just doesn't, and it was sudden and it was kind of abrupt, and that is not landing on, you know, people.
I guess
very well.
But what upsets me, especially as a content creator, is this attitude with young people that everything should be free and don't worry about who owns anything and I don't give a crap and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
And it's the same as when you go to a convention and you see any number of people that have purchased a booth that just sell prints of something they don't own. Yeah. And they, you know, look, hey, I drew Captain America and I'm selling my Captain America print. Okay, great. Yeah. But then if Marvel comes by and goes, oh, by the way, we own that. You can't, don't worry about it, but please stop selling that.
Yeah.
Well, that's our property. Then everyone's outraged. Well, I'm sorry. You don't get to sell, you don't own Captain America. You don't get to sell a print of it. Like, what did you expect?
Sure. But
it was great while it lasted, but.
But could you say it's the same thing, though, when somebody's just playing ambient music in their room because they like heavy metal and it just gets picked up by this thing?
Yes, they don't own that music. Look, it's a double standard. If you want to just play heavy metal music and sit in your room and listen to it with your buddies, that's fine. But the minute you're streaming it on a service that lets you earn money for your stuff, or you're saving it as a permanent video that's up on the web, it changes the context of what you're doing. Now you're not just listening to it. Now it's free for everyone to listen to, and that changes the context of what you're doing with the music.
So I think there's two different issues here, too.
Yeah.
The ambient music, we can have a discussion about whether mechanical royalties and copyright law is appropriate for encouraging creativity. And that's a whole different show, right? But the law is what it is. And ambient music is clearly an infringing use unless you have a license.
Mm-hmm.
And with video game, in-game music, that is also an infringement unless you have a license. But I think what, you know, there's a trick here where Twitch is like, okay, we're not going to do it on live. Well, why not? Why not do it on live? It's still infringing, right? Why are you giving a pass to live and going after archive? And the other point that I think is the most relevant is things like Content ID on YouTube, things like Audible Magic, which is what Twitch is using, have lots of false positives. And it's mm-hmm. always much more difficult to appeal those sorts of things than it is for them to be implemented on the other end. And they're sort of throwing the baby out of the bathwater, saying if you have a snippet of music in any 30-minute block, the entire 30-minute block gets muted.
Mm.
So you're punished beyond just the infringing portion.
I guess my question is, so what? And the reason why I ask that is because if you're just like if you imagine some guy running upstairs, honey, guess what? Oh, what's the matter? Oh my God, this is the worst news. What? There was a false positive on my Dota video, and now 30 minutes of my video on demand stream is muted. Oh, well now what? Right. Well, so take the bread out of the oven. Let's eat. There was only 12 people watching it. Who gives a shit?
Right.
Well,
I'm not allowed to curse
tonight
on here. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Shit's okay.
I'm curious, Scott. Tonight you said you're doing a live stream of a game that you're doing.
Yeah.
Is it gonna disturb you if they mute all the audio because they've detected every 30 minutes the music from the game?
Not only
your in-game music, but they're muting you guys talking too. I mean, that's kind of where people are getting most upset about it.
We have 50 people. Well, it's still okay. Look, I'm breathing rarefied air. Okay. The difference for me is that we're going to have anywhere from 50 to 100 people watching live.
Yeah.
It's usually around what we have right now. It'll wreck the evening for some people. And then we'll contact our friends at Twitch and say, hey, man, what's going on? What should we do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they'll go, oh, well, let's do this, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, hey, you know, but we're professionals, so I'm in a different boat. Mostly what will happen is when I pick a highlight to upload to YouTube from Twitch, I'll pick one that doesn't have our voices muted because that would be a boring highlight. But I mean, it just might mean I don't upload a highlight this week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. When it becomes – that's the thing, right? That's the thing that bothers me. It's not an issue unless you're trying to make a living off of it, because there are streamers. That's their income.
No, there's guys that this is all they do. Yeah. Like Day 9 or whoever.
Yeah. Be pissed.
If you're Artosis or Trump.
Right. It would be like if my ISP was false positively tagged a strip and covered all the dialogue because it thought I was posting lyrics.
Yeah.
And then my strip didn't have words in it that day. But what I'm saying is, if that's the case, if you are making a living from it, then you're a professional, and it's time for you not to play your Guardians of the Galaxy awesome mixtape in the background.
But what about the situation where I wasn't playing that in the background? I was playing an actual game.
Then that is a matter of execution, not the ethics of it. And that you should be pissed about that. But I mean, yeah, let's wait and see if they can fix that.
Yeah, and they're and well, they've already backpedaled some, right?
I'm going to be curious if they block your audio tonight after you guys post it.
I doubt it. I don't think that game has had any of those experiences yet. In fact, the only muted videos I've seen so far, everyone's freaking out about a lot of different like weird edge cases. But the biggest the ones you see the most are people who are just blaring their stereos in their room and they're playing whatever. And some of these people have 60,000 people watching them play Hearthstone or something. So they're, they're talking about big audiences, and that guy just happened to have on a crappy sounding radio, some, top 40, whatever. And they just muted this big red bar across his audio across that whole video.
It's literally like a Shazam on their end, and it picks something up and it goes, mom, Uh-oh.
And I get the frustration for people, and I totally get what you're saying, Scott, too, which is some people are complaining because, hey, they never caught me before. Mm-hmm. I don't like that they're catching me doing this now. But I've had the frustration of like playing with permission a parody of Frozen's Let It Go and having it tagged by Content ID on YouTube as a Czechoslovakian version of a song that it wasn't. And then having to go and like go in to the interface and our entire show being gone for a while until we notice that it's been blocked, until we know, and then we go dig it up and all of that. And so when you multiply that across as many people as use Twitch, that becomes a problem. I want to give CEO Emmett Shear huge props for being willing to go right to an AMA the day they announced this, apologizing, saying, "You're right, guys, we should have given you more notice. That was our fault.
Yeah.
You know, we screwed up there, and I'm not going to make excuses for it."
Again, the execution of it, I can see it being poor, but I'm not opposed to the legalities of anyway.
No, I totally agree with you too. Yeah. I just think that if they can get, especially for the in-game stuff that's getting blocked, that's part of that gaming experience. That's the stuff that is ridiculous and needs to be fixed.
I just think
there's a couple things. We should wait and see what the actual policy is, because we've got conflicting information and they're changing things. They're rolling out an appeal button to make it easier if you think you've been accidentally muted and you shouldn't have been. Wait and see what they actually end up doing once they've worked out all the kinks.
Yeah.
And then we can have a conversation about, well, what is the best way to roll out stuff like this to allow what there should be a way for me to play copyrighted music and pay for it, and have a royalty. And there should be a royalty and a set of laws that actually work to encourage creativity and help people like us and like Scott Kurtz to create things without feeling like they're going to get ripped off, but that also allows for fair use and remix culture and all of that. And right now, that's a mess. It's all over the place. On the one hand, the people Scott's talking about that are just like, let's just steal everything because why not? And then you've got the other side, people saying, well, let's lock down everything and not let anyone do anything unless they pay a shitload of money for it.
Yeah.
Did any of you guys watch Deadwood?
Yeah. Love that show.
So it's the internet equivalent. It's the digital equivalent of, well, we got here before this was owned by the United States and we staked our claims, but it's engine territory. So what happens when the government makes us a territory? Mm-hmm. It's a huge mess.
Yeah.
But it's because everyone ran out here and just started putting stuff up. It's like YouTube.
Yeah, that's why they say it's the Wild West, the internet.
Yeah.
That reference is kind of trite and dumb, but it also is kind of accurate.
Like, Eskimo Pie in the chat room says, patience, impossible. The pitchforks are already out.
I know.
And even within that ecosystem, you begin to have the smaller fights. In the Deadwood comparison, still good. When Cy Tolliver moved in with his freaking casino and gambling establishment, Swearingen was rightfully pissed, and he felt like he should dominate and monopolize something. And, well, no, another guy can come in here and compete. So, yeah, I mean, all of this stuff, I completely...
Wait, is Justin Can Billy the Kid in this analogy?
No. I don't think so, but a very weird looking. I can't remember.
Wait, Billy the Kid is in Deadwood, right?
Is he in Deadwood?
No. You're thinking. Oh, You're thinking of
Wild Bill Hickok.
Wild Bill Hickok.
Yeah. Justin Kan is Wild Bill Hickok.
There you go. Perfect. You nailed it. What is Justin? He's just got a lot of money. He's fine. He doesn't need
Justin.tv.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's been involved in that stuff very much lately. But someone did ask the other day on some other, I can't remember where I heard it, but some tech show, they were saying, does Justin, are all his VODs, all his old videos of him living his life with his camera helmet, because that was the whole impetus for this thing being created, are those still available? And then I wondered, does he care? And then I thought, probably can't even see
out of that. He probably has backups of him.
Giant money ball he lives in. Anyway, there you have it. There's your Twitch talk. I know we're running long, but I really want to hear about this extracting audio from visual information thing you found.
Creepy.
Can you explain this, Tom? Because this is pretty rad.
Yeah, we really don't have enough time to give it the proper attention it deserves. There is a Daily Tech News Show episode where we talked about it too. But the short version is they're able to look at the video of a and it's high level video, 2,000 to 6,000 frame per second. Although they have an algorithm that can do it with 60 frame per second video as well. They look at the video through soundproof glass of an object in a room. And they can analyze the vibrations of that object to reconstruct the audio that is happening in that room. So one of the most popular examples is a potato chip bag. And just the vibrations of the potato chip bag allow them to reconstruct the audio. This is what it sounded like inside the room with the potato chip bag.
Okay. Mary had a little lamb whose fleece was white as snow. And everywhere that Mary went, that lamb was sure to go.
And this is what they were able to reconstruct with a camera shooting video of the potato chip bag from 15 feet away through soundproof glass.
Okay. Wow, dude.
I'm sorry. So you're telling me that they had nothing but video, and by analyzing the vibrations, the very not obvious to the naked eye vibrations of the bag. They extrapolated that audio from video.
They've also done it off the leaves in the room as well.
You know what's weird is that sounded like something from the first wax cylinder in like 1919. That's crazy.
You know
cool.
what's
Listen, come here, I need you.
What's really crazy about this is this seems like an extension of the thing where they can point a video camera at your face and they can measure your pulse and your blood pressure and everything just by the minute changes in your skin color every beat of your heart. It's really kind of creepy.
Weird.
Yeah, they said this could be used for other things like being able to like determine a pulse from your wrist. You could actually measure the pulse on the wrist.
Or to spy on us all. That's the scary angle. Somebody can just read what I'm saying through a wall because the minute vibrations
not
on this cardboard
wall.
Box
That's
over
glass.
Here.
They could do it now. Yeah, they could do it now with a laser pointed at a glass on the window. So.
Just another way for the government to catch me masturbating.
See?
And that's what they're always after.
The rumors
that's
were
why
true.
My office is in the basement.
That's all they ever get.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're after.
What
but.
Useful information can they gain from that? Good stuff. All right, we are going to quickly rip through what we like to call the pop quiz. It starts like this.
America scores and wins.
Can't waste these. Got to do these. These are amazing. And I knew we'd have a talk at a bunch because this is a smart freaking crew here. Let's see how smart they really are, though, Tom. We're going to do trivia. We're going to start with Scott Kurtz. By the way, your topic, you don't know this, but your topic is Peanuts. The Charles Schulz classic, Peanuts.
I have a chance.
You probably do all right. If you get an answer correct,
come home.
If you get it wrong, and Tom scores it. Tom scores it very strangely. I'm warning you right now, you're not going to be ready for that. So, Tom,
there's
you ready with your gavel?
There's a very large and complicated set of rules for the score.
This is all true. I got to pull up Kurtz. Here he is. Okay, question number one.
Yeah.
What was the date of the first Peanuts comic publication?
I don't know. I want to say 57 is the year.
You're going to say 57. Let me check. Crap. This thing broke. There we go. It is incorrect. It is October 2nd, 1950. We would have accepted just the year, but 50 was...
But he gets a half point for admitting he didn't know up front.
Oh, well,
see, now it's working in your favor, so good job.
Okay, good.
Next question. How much does Lucy Van Pelt charge for a psychiatric session or whatever you'd call them?
5 cents.
Let me double check. Is that correct? It is correct. Nicely done. 5 cents. Next question. Who is Charlie Brown's favorite baseball player who gets sent to the minor leagues?
Oh my God. Oh no. I don't know.
It is. I don't know is not correct. It is Joe Schlobotnik.
That's Schlobotnik. Yeah. Darn it.
You know, you're going to get a quarter point for admitting you don't know, but you can't milk that horse forever.
No, I'm not trying to.
Milk that horse. next up is when is Charlie Brown's birthday?
Where did you find these questions?
We had a crack intern, Mike Icewarm, put them together. He does it every week, makes these amazing questions. They're pretty good.
Well, I'm just going to try to guess the year, okay?
Okay. Actually, we can take a month and a day. I don't have the year.
I'll say. Oh, really?
Because I don't think they ever say in the comic.
I gotcha. I'm going to say it's April 1st.
You are incorrect. It is October 30th. October 30th.
Such a BS piece of trivia. Okay. Go ahead.
In one strip, Linus bets Lucy that he can go without his blanket for 2 weeks, but he can't. What does he try to use as a replacement blanket during this time?
Snoopy's ear.
You are correct. Nicely done. Well, that was fast. What is the name of Snoopy's brother who lives in California?
Spike.
That is correct.
Ooh, quarter point bonus for speed.
It's damn good. What is Schroeder's address?
Beethoven Lane. I don't know.
You are incorrect. 1770 James Street, same as Beethoven's birth. So you were close.
Oh, that's great.
You were in the neighborhood. That's actually good to know, generally. That meme extends further into his life.
He's so gonna lose a quarter point for being too close without.
I told you, dude. I told you, it's weird. You can't predict it.
I like it.
Yeah. When final question: when Snoopy is battling the Red Baron, what kind of plane does Snoopy pretend his doghouse is?
A swap with camel.
You are correct. Nicely done. Very good, I think. But we're not gonna add you up yet because now we gotta let Steven do his business. And then we'll compare your scores. Steven, how are you feeling? You good? All right.
All the times that I've been on this show, I've never done well.
Well, let's see how you do with DC villains trivia.
Okay.
It might be up your alley.
Maybe.
What planet is Darkseid from?
Apocalypse.
Oh, sorry. You're right. Scott threw me off. Maybe hit a button.
He was buzzing Scott for correcting.
Yeah. Nicely done. All right. Next question, rather. In The Killing Joke, all right, it's classic. What is said to have caused the death of the Joker's wife and unborn child?
Complications from birth?
You are incorrect. She was killed when testing out a baby bottle warmer that got electrocuted as a result.
Tenth of a point for having a baby involved somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Next one. What is Bane's alter ego? Meaning, who's his real name?
The Spanish name. I don't know.
You're on the right track.
I'm on the right track, but forget his name.
All right. It's Antonio Diego. Antonio Diego.
There you go.
Look at Tom thinking, how do I score this?
Just checking the rules. Nothing applies.
Yeah, these rules are weird.
Maybe in the Spanish language rules. I'll have to look at that later.
All right. Sinestro was born on Kuragar.
Yeah.
Korrigar, rather. What sector is this planet in? This one's a hard question.
Ridiculous. These questions.
I know. Who would know this?
These are tough. I don't know.
Yes.
7612.
1417, sir.
No.
Actually, you get a half point for that being numbers.
There you go. Yay. Nicely done. Oh, yeah. You didn't say like sector, the Zebulon or something. What is Deathstroke's real name?
Oh,
dang it.
I'll give you a hint. It's three names.
I don't know it. Dang it.
Slade Wilson.
Yep. Yeah.
We would have
don't watch Arrow, do you?
No, you don't.
No, I'm actually not up to that part. I just started watching the show.
And I was going to give you a quarter point for saying you don't know, but then you'd lose a quarter point for not watching Arrow. So.
I'm actually up to episode 10.
All right,
we'll give you 10
points. All right. Yeah.
It's hard to believe this scoring wizard is the same babyface Tom we saw in that Nerdtacular video I put up yesterday. Next up, what Wonder Woman villain takes her name from the Greek mythological character of the same name?
Artemis?
You are incorrect. It is Circe. C-I-R-C-S?
C-E? Lannister.
No, that probably is why I said it that way. Am I saying it wrong? C-I-R?
No, you did it right.
Circe. It's Circe. Yeah.
Next up, Brainiac is a member of what species?
I want to say Kulu, but that's not the right one. Dang it.
So close.
So close, I know.
Try to get, just say one. Just blurt it.
Tampon.
Kulon.
I don't know.
Oh, wow. You got it right. It is Kulon.
There you go.
What?
Nicely done.
Wow.
Did Scott Kurtz really say tampon?
You get the half point dumb luck bonus for that.
I could have sworn I heard tampon somewhere.
I did not say anything.
I thought you said tampon.
I did not say tampon.
All right. No tampons from Kurtz. Here we go. Final question. When Lex Luthor becomes president of these United States, yes, who takes over LexCorp in his stead?
Miss Tessmacher.
You are incorrect. That's pretty good, though. It is Talia al Ghul, daughter of Ray over there. Yeah. Nicely. I hate his name. Never
of
say
the
it right.
Ra's al Ghuls?
That'd be the guy.
It's Raish.
It's of the al Ghuls. So nicely done.
Both
of the Kentucky
al Ghuls. Kentucky al Ghuls. Nicely done, all. Tom, how did they do?
Well, with a score of 4.75, Mr. Scott Kurtz, and right on his tail with a score of 4.2, Mr. Stevens.
Oh, look at that. Scott Kurtz, everybody. Congratulations. Nicely done, man. Your first time and you nailed it. Steven, you've won other times, right? You're like at least
I don't think so.
2 for 4,
I think. When I was on with Randy, I flubbed that one, and then last time I was screwed that one up too.
Well, we're gonna from now on we're gonna try to read your vibrations through the window and see how we
there you go.
All right, let's tear through this real fast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Your punishment will be more severe. So what do we got here? It's forecast. It used to be a show. Now it's a segment. It was a thing we used to do as a full show. Now it's just a little piece. And Steven, you had one this week. What is it? What do you got?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about all these transfers of music and data and Twitch and YouTube and the Googles and all of that stuff. By 2015, companies and theorists are thinking that 100 million exabytes of data will be transferred per year.
Wow. And you're talking about legal data, right?
And that's legal data. That's movie downloads, and that's peer-to-peer sharing by 2015. And certainly we can start to see this with some of the cloud sharing and Dropbox and that kind of stuff, and even through Google Drive. But they're estimating that by 2015, 100 million exabytes per year. And if you're going to store all that, they're also predicting that the cost of a petabyte by that same year will drop to $10 per petabyte.
Does this jive with current
that's
trends,
next
Tom?
Next year? A $10 petabyte drive.
Yeah, by 2015, yeah.
Wow. That's next year.
Wow. Yep.
That's like less than 6 months away.
Yep.
I just don't see it.
Yeah.
You don't see it?
Okay. It seems
a petabyte
a quick.
Drive for 10.
Put that out.
Are you talking about, wait, a petabyte storage, you're talking about like in the cloud?
No, I'm talking about being able to buy like a 10 petabyte drive for $100.
Wow. If that's true by 2015, I am loving 2015. Because that is cheapo. So, okay.
That's 4 months away.
How much right now is a terabyte?
4 to 6.
If you broke down a terabyte, what are we paying per terabyte? I don't even know. Well,
I'll
tell you, $74. Anywhere between $59 to $74.
All right. So, here we go.
So, you can't even get a terabyte for $10 right now.
Storage hierarchy, blah, blah, blah. I was going to try to find it. I just don't know where the numbers are trending, but it does seem like certainly the streaming numbers are trending up. So,
That's 1,000 terabytes.
And you're saying, so what you're saying, Steven,
it's a prediction.
Is if by a year, no, that's okay. In a year's time, it's possible that enough of the video streaming trend has pushed that market so hard that it has gotten down to these bargain basement levels. In other words, you can't have one with the other is what you're getting at.
Right.
All right.
Who here that has important data that they store, like comics and podcasts, who's still using physical drives and not just storing it in a cloud service like Dropbox?
I do both.
Everything is backup.
Okay.
Yeah, I make sure I've got a cloud version and a local physical hard drive.
Yep. Yeah, and I have multiple physical local backups plus the
I'm
cloud.
I'm ridiculously paranoid, though.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, you have enough drives go bad, and it's justified paranoia.
I forget how big we have. We've got like something like 20 terabytes sitting over here for storage.
Scott, do you have printable resolution master, PSDs and scans from that far back?
I have them on CDs. I have them on various hard drives. Mm. Probably not enough hard drives now that I'm listening to you guys.
Yeah. So it was like 98 when you started, right?
With
the comic proper.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of data spanning across a lot of different standards, including, you know, you may have even been in zip territory for a while in 98.
I did have a zip drive for a while. In fact, there's probably some stuff that I don't have that's somewhere on a zip drive. And then another cool thing with me is on books that I've printed, there are printers out there that have it's some stuff saved in the form of books I've given them. So they have it either on some kind of set of masters or actual digital media.
So you Tom, would it make you happy if I said 2020?
I might buy 2020. Yeah. Okay. I could at least say that that's a possibility.
Yeah. All right, by 2020 then you'll be able to buy your petabyte in $10 increments.
Well, look what I remember what I was paying for gigabytes in drives in like say 2010.
My first gigabyte drive was $1,000.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's a lot of money.
And that was in like 96 or 7.
They're doing a lot with aerial density and stuff like that. So.
Sure. And I you know, if you're talking 2020, these cheap drives you're talking about, I'll bet you they're not anything like current storage or even current SSD. I'll bet there's something new or different or, you know, evolved past that, because the bigger these drives get, the more trouble they are. They just are.
Yeah. Are the Thunderbolt drives any cheaper?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a relative cheaper. They're still way too expensive, but they're less than they used to be. I mean, I was tempted a little while ago to make another business purchase and get one of those Mac Pros, the new ones, the little cylinder jobs. And, it would end up having to be relying a lot on some external storage for what I'm doing. And those external storage solutions are just ridiculous. They're just over the top, bad, expensive. So, I hope you're right, Stephen. I'm into that.
It would be great. I mean, especially if it gets smaller, that's the biggest problem. And the heat that's being generated by the drives right now. The noisiest thing in this office right now is the RAID array that has all the hard drive storage on it. And actually, of course, that draws the most power.
Here's where I'm going to agree with you. I just figured this out. And Tom, you refute this if you want. I'll bet you in 2015, the price of wholesale, hey, Netflix is opening 3 new data centers in the middle of the Midwest, wholesale drives per exabyte could be that low by that time. We're talking cloud storage, buying a retail drive at Best Buy, if they even exist in that year, but like straight up, we're a huge company with a giant data center and a ton of buying power, and we're doing it in cloud storage and delivery services or whatever, that those guys could end up with prices like that. Nay.
Maybe per month.
Yeah, it is. Next year's probably pushing it, but hey, let's hope. I hope you're right, dude.
I totally hope he's right. I'll be snapping a couple of those things up.
We got one email this week. This comes to us from John. He says, regarding movie-based TV shows we forgot that worked out well. We were mentioning them last week, and we were kind of having a hard time finding too many, but we found a few. You know, it was like MASH or, you know, other things where a movie came first and then the TV show was successful. Right. He says, I'm confiscating your geek cards. Hello, Stargate, he says. Stargate was arguably a more successful and more beloved as a show than it ever was as a movie. In fact, I'm not a fan of the movie. I like the first 20 minutes and the rest is kind of crap. Stargate. How could we, lest we forget, man. That was a good example. And if you watch that series and you have it on DVD or Blu-ray and you watch the first two episodes and wonder why there's full frontal nudity, just be reminded that started on a... on what Showtime was it?
Yeah.
What show is this?
Stargate SG-1.
Yeah, SG-1.
Like first five?
Maybe. Something like that. And they cut out, like if you buy, there's only a couple of collections where the nudity's still in it. Well, we talked about this on, what was it? We did Autopilot for this, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know that our versions had nudity. I don't remember.
Buffy was also a movie that was a terrible movie, but a great series.
Oh, good point. Did we talk about Buffy? We might have. Anyway. John, you're right. We neglected Stargate. Thank you for that. If you want to send in your own emails, and they're likely to make it here, currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the show. Man, what a smart crew this is today. I couldn't be more thankful for our good guests. Stuff. You guys were awesome. Scott Kurtz, tell people where they can find your work on the internet.
You can go to pvponline.com for my daily comic strip PvP, and you can go to tabletitans.com for my... twice a week comic strip Table Titans. And then if you go to survivingcreativity.com, You can check out a podcast we started. Brad Geiger, another cartoonist, and my business dev guy, Corey Cosoni. We talk usually once a week about what it's like to try to make a living in the business of new media and how to survive it.
Nice. Available now. iTunes and everywhere those things are found. And PvP Online on Twitter. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah.
And coming up, Comic Dorks back 12th of August next week. We will have a brand new show. We're recording in the daytime. We'll let you know streaming times and all that at home. So if you're interested in that show coming back in a big way, watch for that. Steven, you always
major
have...
Major spoilers. Yeah. Yep, majorspoilers.com. That's where people want to go to find new comic book news, reviews, and other things. Major Spoilers Podcast Network is where you need to find us on the iTunes if you want to find all of the shows that we produce. But in particular, if you're a Dungeons & Dragons type person, you might want to check out Critical Hit. It's our real play Dungeons & Dragons podcast that people seem to enjoy. And you can always find me on Twitter at Major Spoilers.
Nice. Do you have a show about how to wear a fez in a proper manner?
It's called Finally Friday. It's a new Friday streaming show that we do. It's on every Friday, 3:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time.
Nice.
Or that Standard Time, depending on where you're at.
Shockingly speedy answer to my very dumb question. I'm impressed.
Do I get a quarter point for that?
Of course.
Tom,
do we have any other business, sir? You have anything else?
New I don't know if I think we mentioned it, but the new August Tech History Kindle single is out. Scott does the illustrations. I collect a bunch of public domain facts, so he does all of the creative part of it. And it's every month. We've been doing it now. We're almost completed the year. We only have two more months to go to complete the whole set.
Yep.
So go check out TomMerrittBooks.com if you want links to all of those. They're 99 cents a piece.
It's a fun project. Nice. And more cool stuff like that coming up soon. I think that's going to do it. Andrew Allen does our theme music. Current Geek at, on Twitter, at Current Geeks, where you can find our Twitter accounts. Tom's at Ace Detect. I'm at Scott Johnson. You can find our subreddit, as always, at currentgeek.reddit.com. Please use it and use it often. currentgeek@gmail.com is our email address, and currentgeek.com for the show. It's going to do it for us, for me, and for everybody here. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we take a look at this week's hot copyright controversy, that being whether a photographer has rights to shots taken by a monkey with his camera. Back in 2011, British photographer David Slater spent a great deal of time and money taking a wildlife photography trip to Indonesia. During this trip, a pack of crested black macaques grabbed one of Slater's cameras and ended up taking hundreds of pictures. A couple of these pictures ended up being good-looking selfies, which made for a great story and a good-selling photo for Slater. However, the Wikimedia Foundation has this week refused to delete the photos from Wikipedia, arguing that there is no valid copyright in the images. But is this true? I agree with most copyright experts that US and European copyright laws provide rights to creators of works of authorship only when the author is human. The problem for Slater here is that he did not add anything to the monkey selfies. He did not frame or arrange the shots, and he did not alter them or improve them upon bringing the photos back home. The author of a photograph is the one who snaps the shutter, absent some of these other possible additions to the creative expression or work. Merely transporting the camera to Indonesia and owning it is not enough. Slater did not add anything here, and so if there could be a copyright, it would be owned by the monkey. Like other IP law doctrines, copyright law does change with time. Perhaps the era of everyone having a smartphone in their pocket will force another major revision to copyright law to account for complex situations such as this. The bottom line is, today's copyright law does not allow for a copyright when a monkey steals a camera and takes a selfie. Perhaps when the Planet of the Apes timeline begins, we will adjust our laws and give unto Caesar what is his. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this or other similar cases, please check out my upcoming seminars at Gen Con in August.
Hi, I'm Jeannie. Let's explore the history of Westeros in Game of Thrones. One of the titles the King of the Seven Kingdoms carries is King of the First Men. Who are the First Men? As their name implies, they are the first humans to come to Westeros. They came across a land bridge from Essos called Army of Dorne. They clashed with those already in Westeros, particularly the Children of the Forest. They found the children's sacred carved weirwood trees. Because the children used them for communicating, the men would destroy them when they went into battle. The children fought back by having their magic users destroy the land bridge, effectively cutting off reinforcements for the men. After 2,000 years of fighting, the two cultures were at a standstill. Realizing they were getting nowhere, they agreed to a treaty called the Pact. This ended the Dawn Age. What followed was the Age of Heroes, a peaceful coexistence lasting 4,000 years. During that time, the men converted to the children's religion and learned from them how to use ravens for messaging over long distances. The First Men are still a huge influence in the North. Have questions about the history of Westeros? Or is there something you've always wondered and would like me to talk about? You can reach me at Tyrion'sLanding.com or Tyrion'sLanding on Gmail and Twitter. The music used is by Kevin MacLeod.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there. We'll be right back.